This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Darius Thomas.
I have opinions.
And Karina Anglada.
We're getting into the weeds here.
Who says that you can't go from being a Division I basketball player to being a security guard while also forging your path for the future? Well, that's part of the story for Chris Haynes, NBA insider who took an unconventional route to becoming one of the faces of NBA reporting. Haynes took a chance as a beat writer working for free to becoming a trusted avenue for today's top NBA players and television networks.
Okay, do we pick a time?
If I go to time that is, we can definitely do that.
This is how we sync all the channel.
15.
Why do I get so nervous? I want a real clapper. It's human error is too much for me.
It's fun. We don't even need it.
Do you have an interest in adding motion design to your skill set, but just aren't sure where to start?
Let's go!
Welcome to Baller FX, your source for sports content and motion tutorials. From tips and tricks to long-form tutorials and project deep dives, there's a lot to take in. There's even a free mini-course playlist called How to Animate Sports for Social. This playlist will take you step-by-step through the process of creating a 5-second animated player stat graphic. For your sport-specific motion training, visit BallerFX on YouTube and get started today.
Everyone, welcome back to the Creative Sports Podcast. As we wrap up our Black History Month spotlights for creatives, we have a special guest here today, known by many, maybe introducing to a few. We have Chris Haynes, NBA insider. Chris, welcome.
Nah, I appreciate you guys for guys and gals for having me on. I'm excited about this, and let's go. I'm ready to get into it.
Let's do it,
Chris. I'm really excited for this conversation because for the audience tuning in, we are fresh off of the NBA trade deadline, and I'm sure there's the heavy sigh. I can sense there's probably a lot going on.
Wait, what happened?
What happened? I want to hear your perspective right now. Like, again, fresh off the end of the trade deadline. Like, how are you feeling, General?
I'm feeling okay now, but I would say we need to rephrase that question. You asked what happened. I would counter that and say what didn't happen. That's the way I would say that. You know, obviously the big one, Luka, AD. Nobody seen that coming. The way that I received that news is, I'm trying to think, I'll go ahead and say it. So I got a call from, was it a call or text? Let me make sure. It was a call. It was a call I received from Rich Paul. He represents Anthony Davis. And on the call, he just said, hey, just letting you know it's real. And he hung up. And so I didn't know what he was talking about. So I believe this was like a Saturday night. It was a late Saturday night. I was actually watching the Vince McMahon documentary. I finally sat down and binge watched, I believe it was 5 episodes. I was watching about all 5 episodes. So that's what I was doing that night, thinking that there wasn't anything happening on a Saturday night. And so anyways, I get a call from Rich Paul saying that it's real. Go. And he hung up. And I didn't know what he was talking about. And so then I looked and I had a text message 2 minutes ago from other people saying that Luka is being traded to LA for Anthony Davis. So I didn't even see the text giving me the news. It took a call from Rich Paul telling me, hey, this is legit. And then I was like, what, legit? And I just have to look at my phone. I had a missed text about 2 minutes ago saying, giving me the deal. So that definitely was something that caught me by surprise. And didn't see that. And from that, it was like a flurry of other moves after that. That was probably one of the more chaotic trade deadlines that I've had. I've been covering the league since 2010, and I can't recall a trade deadline of that magnitude with that type of flurry ever in my career. So I'm definitely relieved once we got to 3 p.m. Eastern time on February 6th. I was definitely relieved to get past that. But it was definitely exciting. I am proud. You know, anytime you could kind of stick it to the NFL, you know, NFL, they step on our toes a lot over here on the NBA. So anytime you get to stick it to the NFL the week leading up to the Super Bowl, you know, you feel pretty good about that.
That's crazy. And for folks listening in, and Darius mentioned it, maybe you're familiar with Chris, maybe you're not. But if you're not, he is one of the lead breaking news guys for all things NBA and has been for such a long time. And, you know, this is a sports creative podcast, and you have a different background than a lot of the guests that we have. But you mentioned having contacts like Rich Paul, right? Breaking the news to you. One of the things that I'm most curious about is how you get creative when it comes to networking and how you build connections with people, because that's important for any industry that you're in. But for you, what's your perspective on getting creative with how you network with people?
Well, you know, you just have to understand, and I'm going to say this, like, the keys to it for me, I'm going to speak on it, but I'm also going to tell you that these are keys to life in general. And this just doesn't pertain to a career. Like, I believe in always greeting and talking and communicating with any and everybody, all walks of life, no matter how high your job title is or no matter how somewhat low people may think it is. And, you know, there have been, you know, just in my profession, yeah, there's been countless times where I've gotten big scoops from, you know, you might have think I've talked to the general manager or the owner or the agent of the player or the player in general, when it may be just a usher that works at the arena whose main job is to stay at a post in the arena that nobody really can go over there, but maybe players may go in and out of that area. And for someone like that, countless times I've gotten a tip from somebody like that saying, hey, I saw this star player walk out the arena in a boot. I saw this player strolled out of the arena, you know, in a wheelchair. And then that is a very significant lead. But if I didn't have a relationship with that individual, or talk to them every time I go into the arena and see them, you know, those are type of stories that just wouldn't come about for you. But with that being said, I remember, I would just say a little quick story. I remember when 2010, I was covering the Portland Trailblazers. It was my first time going in the NBA locker room. And Karina, you would know this, you know, your time with the Warriors, but, you know, oftentimes when the media walks in, players would retreat to the back. Usually it's where they get treatment at, or, you know, but they would just leave the locker room. They know there's a certain time when media comes in
trying to get away.
trying to get away. And I seen this in 2010. And one of the reasons I think that they did this, one of the reasons is that I would see, you know, when the locker room opened up, there might be a player standing by his locker stall, sitting down on his phone, minding his own business. And then a reporter would just come and just stick a mic in their face and just start asking them questions. And I would kind of see their reaction from afar, just looking. And remember, this is my first time like walking in an NBA locker room. And so I would see the disdain that these players would have towards reporters just coming and walking in their face and just asking questions. Like, no pleasantries, no how are you doing, not even asking, you know, is this a good time for you? Can we? None of that.
Right.
And so I saw that. And I was like, I don't want to have that same reaction when I come about. So what I started doing, I would go and I would just, you know, shoot the stuff with them and ask them how they're doing, you know, ask about their family. I might have read something about them previous, you know, kind of done my homework on their background, And I'll go talk to him. Hey, man, you know, what's up? You know, you from there? I'm from that area. I played college ball over there. I mean, we played that city, blah, blah, blah. Next thing you know, you having a full blown conversation just about life, not even about basketball. And so oftentimes I would go in there pregame and just be having these great conversations, and these great conversations would lead to good story ideas. Cause now I kind of know a little bit more about them and they're telling me more about themselves. And then there's the times when actually I do need something on record at the time, they would just be gracious with their time and give me more than what I've even asked for. And that's happened a lot based off my relationship, where I may ask a simple question, but because they got so much love for me, they'll give me this great detailed answer and just give me more. And it might be some news in there. And so it's a long-winded answer to tell you that I've just learned how to communicate with people and establish relationships and just know how to hold a conversation. I think too often in this social media landscape where people can get off saying what and whenever to people, I think we've lost focus on how to communicate, particularly in person. And I think that is definitely key when it comes to my field, but I think it's key in life in general.
That's some good stuff right there.
I'm going to back us up a little bit for the people who don't know who Chris Haynes is. Kind of talk about how you even got to where you are today. Like, when did you know that you wanted to become a reporter, and kind of how you climbed that ladder to get to where you are today as a top NBA insider?
Yeah, I took an unconventional path, but I think most people coming up nowadays will probably have that same experience, but in a different way. You know, I remember when I played college ball, and, you know, I'm from Fresno, California. And, I'll try to make it brief for you guys. So Fresno State, my last year at Fresno State, I was going to graduate. My degree was in kinesiology, and I wanted to become a PE teacher. Because if y'all know, I don't know, maybe y'all PE teachers are different from mine, but the PE teachers that I've had, junior high school and high school, all they did was, you know, they'll tell you, hey, for 2 weeks, we're playing basketball, and they'll throw you balls and they'll let everybody go and play. And then they'll be sitting back on a chair somewhere in the back, just minding their business, doing whatever. And I would be like, in school, I'd be like, I can do that. That's the job I want. I just tell the kids, go play soccer, go run. We doing this for 2 weeks, and they chilling back, sitting on a chair, taking notes or whatever. I'm like, I can do that. So that was my plan, you know, to be a PE teacher. And so the last semester of college, I had to take a African-American writing course, and it was an elective that I had to take for requirements for graduation. And I like African-American history. I love it. You know, I want to do some documentaries on some subjects pertaining to African-American history. I got a bunch of ideas that I want to get off the ground. I'm hoping to doing that relatively soon. But writing, I could not write. Like, when I mean I couldn't write, I couldn't tell you the difference between you are, your, right, you know, the other right. Like, I couldn't tell you. And so I'm sending in these, my essays to my instructor. Name is Dr. Hassan Johnson, who is still at Fresno State to this day. He was giving me good feedback. Said, man, you're a great storyteller. Obviously your technical skills are raw and I can work on you, but he was just giving me great feedback. And I played college ball. I always had visions of dreams of making it to the NBA or playing overseas. And, you know, obviously I didn't get that far in it aside from, you know, a college scholarship to play ball. But I was like, man, let me see if this can translate over to writing about sports. And so I'm from Fresno, California, never been to an NBA game in my life. I would just watch an NBA game on TV. I would write about it from home, and then I would send my story off to like different online publications, like a bunch of them. But Slam Online, Slam Magazine, they were one of the publications that got back to me and said, hey, we got some talent. We can use you. We can give you some exposure. We can't pay you, but we can get you credentialed to some NBA games, but we need you to be in an NBA market. And so remember, this is like a few months before I'm graduating. So I'm like, all right, okay, cool. Now I'm from Fresno, California, born and raised, never really left Fresno ever in my life, period. That's all I know. And so now I'm thinking about, all right, I gotta make a move. Like I wanna try to pursue this. I wanna try to do this. And so, long story short, I chose, you know, Portland. I chose Portland, Oregon. The reason I chose Portland because LA seemed too big for me. I feel like that was gonna be too overwhelming. I felt the same way about the Bay Area and the Warriors. And Sacramento, I played junior college basketball in Sacramento. And that's where I actually live now, but I didn't want to go back to Sac. So I chose Portland, 12-hour drive. So for a year, I worked for free, covering the Blazers for Slam Online. But during that time is what I told you guys about when I would go in the locker room for the first time and kind of see how players were approached, and then I try to adjust my approach. And so for that year, I gained a lot of headway, gained a lot of relationships, broke a lot of stories in that 1 year. And from there, after working for free for a year, Comcast Sportsnet, there was a TV station, Comcast Sportsnet Northwest, which they aired all the Blazer games, similar to, you know, Karina, when you were with the Warriors, it was Comcast Sportsnet Bay Area.
And then
turned NBC Bay Area. That's the same network out there in Portland. They were hiring for a beat writer after my year of work for free. And long story short, I got the job. And so that's how I got into the field covering the Blazers. I did that for 4 years. Then I went and covered LeBron with the Cavs. When he returned back from Miami, covered them for 2 years at the Cleveland Plain Dealer newspaper. Then that's when I met Karina at the Golden State Warriors. I went to ESPN, covered the Warriors. Then from there, Yahoo Sports and TNT. So that's kind of been my path. It's an unconventional path. And the reason why I say that is I remember when I was thinking about trying to take that step to get into the field, I remember reaching out to Mark Spears, David Aldridge, this before I got in, Stephen A. Smith. And I'm asking, like, what do I have to do to cover the NBA? That's what I want to do. And all of them said, now, it wasn't bad advice, but what all of them said were first, you got to work for a small newspaper, cover high school sports, cover preps. And then you do that for 3 or 4 years. And then you can move on to a college beat somewhere, you know, move here. Then you do that for 4 or 5 years, dominate that beat. Then you can get to a professional beat. Well, listen, I'm like 27, 28 at the time. I ain't trying to do all that. You know, I don't want to cover. Like, I don't like, and still to this day, I'm not a big, like, college basketball viewer. Like, I don't start really watching and paying attention to March Madness. I don't like watching high school and college basketball like that. High school a little bit more than college basketball. And so I had no aspirations of doing that. And so their advice wasn't bad, but it was the advice that they had to go down. It was the route that they had to go down on, you know, in their era, because it was about newspapers. But now that you have online blogs, you have social media, you have YouTube, you know, everybody can get discovered in different ways now. And so if it wasn't for the online path that I had coming up, I wouldn't be able to crack, you know, to crack in, because I would have had to go on those other routes. And those other routes, technically, as a writer, I wasn't ready for at that time. So it was just the right time, and I just took advantage of the situation.
And you were probably at the front end of a new way. Like, when you think about 2010, that's when a lot of new opportunity was coming for writers, where you not necessarily were able to skip steps, but more so, like you said, you're able to take an unconventional route to do some, you know, more online stuff was popping up. Social media was starting to, like, take that rise. But, like, going back to the advice that you got from, you know, the three veterans that took those paths, what did you learn about yourself in that moment?
I learned that I wanted it. Like, I really wanted it. And I knew I had a small window to pursue that. You know, I have a family, you know, so, you know, it was a risk on all parties to try to see, okay, what can really be done? Because really it was a dream. And I picked Portland. I told you why I picked Portland is because, you know, I knew it was a small market.
Smaller market,
which was very key. And again, it's a 12-hour drive. And I'm being honest, like, I thought at some point, you know, I would be driving back to Fresno. Like, this would be a little experiment. It would be fun. I'm going to go all out. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm going to go all out and try to do the best that I could. But I did feel like at some point I would go back home. I knew I had a window and I was just going to maximize it the best that I could. And to your point, D, like, you know, social media for real is like, that was big because, again, it's 2010, but I want to say Twitter started to really pop probably around 2008, especially in a sports world.
2008, 2009.
And so
I remember
to be able to have 2009. Okay.
That's when I joined.
I remember it was around that time.
Yeah.
I remember it was around that time. So when I'm talking 2010, it was imperative that I have an account at that time, you know, trying to establish a brand and try to establish myself as someone who covers the Portland Trailblazers. And then just, you know, just accumulating a following on that app and people seeing you and recognizing you and understanding, okay, this is what you do. This is how, okay, he's there, you know, and that was huge. Like, social media was huge for me. And I can only imagine like the tools that are out now for people to be seen and be recognized now. But, you know, like that was key. That was very much key. And, you know, I was in on it and I understood like, okay, I had to do whatever it took to try to get as much exposure as I could. But those veterans, they just taught me, again, great advice. It was sound advice from all three. But what I took from those conversations was that if I'm going to be in, go all in. And, you know, and you look at their careers, like they've definitely been all in. Those are three Hall of Fame careers right there. And so, I still had no aspirations. I didn't even consider it. Didn't even consider going cover high school, preps, college. Like, I was laser focused on what I wanted to do, and it ended up working out.
I love to hear that.
Me too. For me, what stands out is that you said the advice wasn't bad. It's just that the advice wasn't best for you. And I think that's a message we can all take something from that, because, you know, sometimes I like to go to other people and get their opinion, get their, you know, knowledge, their general reaction. But sometimes I'm like, damn, that's not, I get what you're saying, but that's not for me. And I love how you said that, like, super laser focused. That's amazing. And congratulations. Like, you did it. So yeah, that's awesome.
It worked out. And that's to, like, even to the youngsters coming up that want to, you know, do this. Like, I don't tell people how to go about it because there are just different ways. Now, I can tell you how to, like, I can give you advice on how you should adhere to certain standards, something like that. You know, I can give you career advice, right, but I'm not going to tell you to do this, do that. I mean, just like with
the steps, there's no main step.
No, there isn't. There's no main steps anymore. That's, you know, you can get in there. There have been people who have established themselves and established blogs and come up to create these empires, these sports empires, and people today know them as these big figures. But, you know, they are figures who were considered irrelevant 10 years ago. And so there's just a different time and different steps for people. So I never try to tell people to go this way or go that route. You know, I would, you know, just like with singers, think about this, like, even going back in the day, like, if you wanted to become a movie star, where did people tell you to move to?
L.A. Hollywood.
L.A. Hollywood. It's probably the same way if you're an aspiring singer. It's probably Hollywood, probably L.A., it's probably New York,
Atlanta.
But now you got, man, people are going viral on YouTube singing songs. People, stand-up comedy. I'm a big stand-up comedy guy. Stand-up comedy has changed. Like before, you had to go on, you know, go to LA, go to these little small stand-up comedy places that they got popped up all around the country. That was the way that you became a comedy star. Now you got comedy stars taking a route of creating skits on social media. You know, look at Wayne, you know, Country Wayne, and the list goes on and on of how they build these brands and establish themselves on social media. And then now they're getting these big Netflix specials. So there's all these different routes and paths that people could take in any career that can help you get to where you want to go to. So that's why I say, because I'm not equipped to what's out there now. What's the next new thing that you can try? What's the next new tool, the next new app that you get on to get yourself some exposure? That's why I don't tell people what to do. I ask, not try to get educated on what's out there, but there's just a number of ways that your talent, whatever that talent is, can be seen, in which you can, you know, get to the dream job of your field.
I got a question about that, because I have opinions. And
I'm in line with what you're saying,
but like to take it a step further. So like, even though there are different avenues and pathways now, you mentioned music, you mentioned comedy, like there are new avenues, but just looking back on that, and where you went from 2010 to now 2025, you still had some people that, like, everybody doesn't have the ability to text or call a Stephen A. Smith or David Aldridge, right? But still being able to learn and study and have people that you kind of learn from, like even in the creative field, a lot of people will go from, just because you can get a camera at 16 now, oh, well, I'm just going to skip college, go just be an entrepreneur. Do you think that there is still value in learning from people, maybe just not learning it the same way that they did?
Most definitely. Most definitely. I mean, these are people, again, those three people, they've had Hall of Fame careers and they are Hall of Famers. And so, you know, I reached out to them. And think about it, you got to remember, guys, and Karina, like, I reached out to them when I didn't have a name. I wasn't covering any. So just think about that. For them to be receptive to responding back to me and giving me time. I didn't know Spears is my big bro now. Like, that's my bro. I love him. Like, I was at his father's funeral. You know what I'm saying? Like, last summer. Like, that's my bro. I love him. And so it speaks to them that they gave me the time of day to give me this advice. And John Jock Taylor is another one, big sports legend in Dallas, Texas. And so when I listen to them, I listen to their stories. I listen to their past, especially as being a black man trying to come into this field. Because one of the main reasons I wanted to get into the field of sports field, I should say, is because I didn't see a lot of people in media that looked like me and that came from where I came from. And the reason I was able to hit it off with a lot of athletes is because I had a similar background to a lot of them. You know, as far as the struggles and how we came up, family dynamic and all of those things. Right. And so I was able to have like some real organic, real conversations with these guys. And then the NBA is big, but it's also small. Word spreads around. Like, I remember when I was covering LeBron James, covering him for 2 years. And, you know, that was a funny, it was funny how our relationship, took off later on. But I remember that when I was covering LeBron, then all of a sudden, like, I would go to different arenas. Chris Paul knew who I was. Like, John Wall knew who I was. Bradley Beal knew who I was. And they would come up and just like say, what's up? And how, and I used to wonder, because that was before I was writing for the newspaper then. So I didn't have a heavy TV presence. And I used to wonder, like, how do they know me? Like, what, how, you know? Word spreads, man. Players talk about who to talk to, who do not talk to. And so
I believe that.
Yeah. And that helped. And I credit, you know, LeBron definitely. Dame, for those who know how tied I am with Dame Lillard. And so You know, those relationships helped me and they were key. But they're definitely, you know, even though I'm telling you about these different alternative routes you can take, there are still principles and obligations that you have to uphold in any profession. You know what I mean? And so when you're talking about like talking to the OGs, that is still pertinent today. That is still standard today. So no, regardless of how you got here, we still expect you to uphold this field because there are a lot of people that came before us that upheld it in the most professional way possible. And we expect you to do the same thing.
Mm. That's powerful right there. Because I think, and we talked about this on the last interview that we did, which was a video and content creator who was talking about just how much etiquette has shifted. And it's kind of in that same vein, like from your standpoint, even though you're in the media, but when you zoom out, how much has that shift happened in etiquette for media personalities and media in general?
I would say, like, take social media. Social media has been a plus, but it's also been a minus when you're talking about etiquette and how you do this job. And, you know, before, you know, and I still bleed by this, you know, as a reporter, I'm supposed to be non-biased. I don't have a say. I don't care who wins this game. I really don't. And that's what that's me. Now, I do have guys that I'm closer with who I would like to see some good things happen to them, but I'm not openly rooting for anybody. And
right,
so
you
I think
as a journalist,
yeah, you can't, but
with integrity,
with integrity.
Yes. But there's been a blur. I would say since social media has came about, like there's been a blur on the standards as far as like, because you have fan blogs, right? And there are some reporters who come from a fan blog and they will openly root for their team, but they also do some pretty good reporting, right? And so
it's a way to do it.
Yeah, there's a way to do it. I'm still not a fan of it, but I get it. And it's more accepted now. Like say me being a beat writer. I was a beat writer for 4 years covering the Blazers. I was a beat writer for 2 years covering the Cavs. And I was a beat writer for 2 years covering the Warriors. Most fans would think I rooted for those teams because I was a beat writer just following them every day, talking about them every day. And it will surprise you like how fans don't understand, like, no, I don't, you know, as a beat writer, no, you're not supposed to root for the team. No, you're supposed to have some integrity. No, you're not biased. And they don't feel like, they was like, hold on, you're supposed to root for the team. You're supposed to want them to do good. I'm like, no, I don't work for the team. Now right. You have people who, and that's the thing too. Now teams have their own reporters. And again,
we know.
Listen, like my whole now we really getting into some stuff
we're getting into the weeds.
Like, all right, reporter, like, are you really a reporter if you can't report things that you see? Because if you're employed by the company, there are some things you can't report, like, and you see it and you know it. So I don't, you know,
you can't be objective.
You can't.
That was always it's one of those things. Dallas Cowboys probably do it the best out of everybody. But at the same time, there has to be some level of, are we a homer or are we reporting?
Well, and we're talking about sports specifically, but I think this is a media issue.
For sure.
Not issue. It's a challenge across the board. Look at Netflix. You have people producing their own documentaries and they are the subject. Like, is that really, truly
but again,
a documentary?
Karina, Karina, I agree with you wholeheartedly. You will not get me doubting that one bit. But I think a large mass of the public, they don't understand the difference.
Nor do they care sometimes.
Or they don't care. They don't care. Like, the biggest one of the biggest documentaries to come out in the past 5 years is the Michael Jordan documentary.
Absolutely. The Last Dance.
The Last Dance. And that was all him. His own, you know, he was able to put his own narrative out there, and he was able to edit whatever he wanted to, admit whatever he wanted to, and submit whatever he wanted to. Mm-hmm. So is that really? And, you know, and Draymond's my guy, right? I get on, you know, me and Draymond, you know, he has this thing where, what is it called? It's the new media. New media.
Yeah.
New media.
Yeah, I got questions about that. So
yeah, new media. And I'm respecting, like, look, there are a lot of NBA players that got some really good, have some really good opinions, can really break down a game. I think Draymond can break down a game like nobody else. Like, he's really good. Like, Draymond is a basketball mind, period. Mm-hmm. But when one day I told him, I was like, yeah, I mean, it's cool. Like, I remember we were having a conversation. And he was like, man, you know, new me is going to take over. Ain't going to be no jobs for y'all. You know, if the old media don't get things right. And I'm like, I disagree, because, like, who wants to, and to your point, Karina, like, it means more if somebody's writing a story about you, or if somebody's doing a documentary about you. Say that documentary comes off flattering, like it's a really good documentary, and you come out of it looking way better than you did before. That documentary is going to mean so much more when it's coming from somebody that's independent, who actually did the research and put their time into doing this and looking into who you really are, went and talking to the people and asking them who, you know, what you really are, opposed to you doing it yourself. And, you know, how can I take that seriously? Like, how can I, like, this is you. You're putting out what you want to put out. And I think it means more so when you have an independent journalist, a journalist, or independent independent company coming together to put this together for you. And so I still think there's a place for the type of journalism that I grew up around, that I was taught, the principles that were instilled in me and how I do this job. But I'm not someone that's just going to kill a team reporter or a reporter or a journalist who likes the team and roots for the team they cover. It's a blur. It's just a blur line now.
Yeah. And
feels like the AI conversation.
Yeah.
Going on in today's world too.
Yeah.
AI's taking over everything.
Yeah. I felt like that. Yeah. I felt like that as well with AI. But I'm seeing, as I'm trying to put together my YouTube show, AI has been very helpful for me. It's been very helpful for me.
How so? How are you leaning in?
Even with graphics, AI coming up with graphics for me, graphic ideas, and where you can, they'll say, hey, I want to insert me a ball using Hangs Briefs. Put Hangs Brief into a basketball. Okay, it gives you that. And then you can tell it, hey, I want, remove this, add that. Now it's not the best, but it gives you a ton of options to work with. And then from there, exactly. And then from there, I can take it to someone who does graphics, and they can spruce it up for me and tighten it to where I want it. So helpful. It's been very, like, I'm someone, like, I'm just 50-50. It's been helpful to me in that regard, but I don't like to see AIs writing full stories and taking jobs away from humans in that regard, because nobody can tell a story better than a human who has done his research, done her research, and talking to said player, said coach, general manager, and full-fledged reporting. AI cannot duplicate that. So I'm against it when it comes to that.
There's not going to be an AI breaking news
box.
Are they going to get the scoop before you? And are they going to get the scoop? Like, the things that AI can accomplish is, like, it's crazy.
Yeah, it is. It is. And again,
it still needs some human input.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, imagine AI trying to do a game recap without even knowing, like, the game.
right? Yeah, but
they do it.
But with the Luka and AD trade, I bet you everybody thought that was AI. Yeah. You know what I mean?
They do it.
So I don't know. It's crazy times.
Going back to the new media, which is a term that has been around for ages, even before Draymond. What is your full thought on, like, I love that players are creating platforms. I think that KG has an amazing platform. Love Melo's podcast now that he's done. Love what Draymond's doing. But to your point, it doesn't fully tell the story. But I know that unbiasedly, you still need some objectivity to the game. Like, you have, like, I don't feel like personally, and I would love to get your thought on that, that you have to play the game to know how to report the game. And report on the game. And that's any sport. Like, if you look at some of the best writers, you know, two people who get the most flack for it is Stephen A. And Skip Bayless, who are writers, like, first, mm-hmm. right? So what is your thought, like, on these players now thinking, like, oh, well, you can't report on it because you never played the game, even though you played the game in a college level, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's always been said. That's nothing new. That's not anything new right there. The majority of writers never played the game or can't play the game. Karina, did you come? I want to know, were you working for the Warriors when they went to the finals against the Raptors?
Yes, I was.
Do you remember that media game I put together? It was a media. It was during that finals.
Oh yes, but yes, I didn't get to go.
Okay. You should have went. So I put a media game together, and it was sponsored by God. What was that phone company?
Like members of the media actually playing one another.
Members of the media actually playing Metro. It was Metro by T-Mobile. I partnered with them at the time, and it was live stream. On Metro T-Mobile's Twitter account, live stream. Over a million views, but it was like 50 media members. And I put
Who's trying to watch you hoop? Nobody's trying to watch you hoop.
No, hold on. You're wrong. I'm going to tell you, Karina. We had over a million views. They wanted to watch, but they wanted to watch everybody screw up. They want, because these are the people they want to talk about. And that's why I had that idea to put that together, because you see all the fans say it too. They were like, what do you know about basketball? Who can tell you, you know, how can you write about basketball? How can you tell Draymond and Steph what to do or be critical of them when you ain't never played? So this, I felt like this was their opportunity to get back at us, watch us play these games. And social media had a day. Like, everybody, the players are the media were ridiculed. You know, they can't play. A lot of them just can't play. That's just what it is. But to your point, you don't have to have been able to play the game or can play the game to be able to understand and learn basketball. There are a lot of general managers, assistant general managers in NBA that can't play the game, that never played at a high level. You know, there are owners never played the game. So, you know, you can't make that case. But with that being said, let me talk about podcasts and all that, right? We're talking about new media and how things are being done. I'm all, like, I do not personally have a problem with current players having their own podcasts and, you know, just basically they're kind of like trying to give themselves a launching pad early to mm-hmm. their post-playing career so they can have these reps of talking and interviewing. Yeah, it's a new avenue.
New route.
New avenue. But I will say, for someone like Paul George, who I don't know the ratio now, but at one point, there were more podcast episodes than there were of him playing this season.
I saw that someone tweeted.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if the ratio is the same now. I don't know. But at a certain point, and there's probably still more episodes than games played. I think the optics are bad in that situation, because I think you have to remember that first and foremost, you owe everything to the game. That's what's paying you. That is why we know who you are. It's because of the game. And I think if you're like, So as Karina would know, when a player is injured, they don't have any obligation to speak to the media throughout that period for however long they're injured. Now, there's supposed to be a rule where, like, if you're injured for a long time, you got to talk for like once a month, address the media. But for the most part, they don't have to talk to media, right? But now you got a podcast and you doing all your talking there, you know? So I think there's some hypocrisy there. But I just think most importantly, it's just bad optics when you're not on the court, but you're committed enough to keep coming out with these episodes. I think it's a bad look. I think that I know the league is, when players requesting trades and doing all this stuff, and the way it's going, the way it's happening. I talked to a bunch of handful of former retired players, and they've all told me that their concern is one day that the league is going to go back to non-guaranteed contracts because guys are getting these big guaranteed contracts and not underperforming. You know, you can't, having a guaranteed contract doesn't mean you're going to live up to that on the court, but not being available, you know? So that's a problem, man. Then it's one thing when you're not being available. Okay. Say before podcasts, when you weren't available, we can think all we want that, oh, he's behind the scenes putting in work. He's doing everything he can to get back out there. You know what I mean? Like you can have, like, even if that wasn't the case, you could just think that or want to believe that, right? But now you got podcasts being dropped, you know, while you're out. And that's when people, and again, that's not to say that this individual is still not putting work in behind the scenes. I just think it's bad optics. And so that's what I would say about, I don't know if that's new media or that's just a way of, I don't know. I just think, I think it's a bad look. And I know people are complaining behind the scenes, people in high ranking fields within the association. And I just hope that the players don't take things too far to where it could get to a point where we start seeing a lot of these contracts are non-guaranteed.
So you've talked about your entrance into the NBA through the Portland Trail Blazers and some of your additional stops. I think a lot of times we all start with this grand vision of dream and a dream of what we want our career to look like. For you to be a national broadcaster, podcaster, and writer covering the NBA now, how are you able to put in that time? I guess in a way, I'm sitting here listening to you going, well, although you didn't go back to the high school and college and put in your time and effort there, you did start in a small market. You've moved to a couple different markets, and you expanded your reach. But it sounds like it's all based on your hard work and connections that you made along the way in order to build your career that way. How were you able to focus on where you were without thinking big picture, like, I'm not moving fast enough, I'm not going where I want to go as fast as I want to go?
Well, no, I definitely thought that way. But I will say, I want to put at the forefront God. Like, without God, like, none of that other stuff is happening. So, like, God was definitely on my side and helping me navigate through all this when I didn't have no experience prior. So him first and foremost, and then me just making up my mind that I was going to be determined and go forward. But one thing that I didn't mention, remember I said I worked for a year for free, Slam Online. Remember, I got a family, you know, I got four daughters. So I still had to have food on the table. I'm working for free now, and I'm out there in Portland, Oregon. So the only job, and I had just graduated, you know, with my kinesiology degree. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go out to Portland and I'm going to get that PE teacher job that I was talking about, right? I'm going to get that PE teacher job. So I'm going to try to do that during the day and then go cover Blazer games at night. I could not find a PE job for the life of me. I could not. And you know, you always hear, like, once you get a degree and everything, it'll take care of itself. It wasn't taking care of itself. Like, I wasn't getting taken care of at all. And PE, that's one of the, And I remember they told me, they started telling us this, our council started telling us this, like my last year at Fresno State. It was like, yeah, these schools, they are de-emphasizing PE. Like these elementaries, junior highs, high school, they're eliminating these jobs. Like they're, and I'm like, man, this is not what I want to hear my last year. So, but it, that definitely was the case. I could not find a PE job. The only job that I can find was a security job. So where I, during the day, I was a security guard for a high school and I was a security guard for an apartment complex. So I did that during the day for a year. And then I went and covered the Blazers at night during for the game. So I forgot that I left that part out. That's what I did for that full year. And I couldn't wait to tell that security job I was out. No 2 week notice. I just got out. Like, yeah, that was just, it wasn't the fact that like, I didn't think the job was beneath me. Yeah, I was out, Corinne. Like I was gone. And it wasn't like, I'm not trying to diminish that position, but I didn't go to school for that. Like, that's not what I envisioned when I got my degree.
And that wasn't your goal.
It was not my goal. And it was so hard. I did it for a year. And I'm like, I went to school. I went to college. You know, they didn't tell me this. They didn't tell me I got to come have a security job at a high school and at an apartment. I'm at an apartment complex walking around. You know what I mean? Like, this ain't what I want. So it was like very disheartening. Like, you know, it was days, I'm being honest, like I just cried. Like, this is not what I signed up for. Like, asking God, man, like, what's going on, man? Like, yeah, I talked to God. I'd be like, God, what's going on, man? Like, come on, bro. Like, what's, you know? And but it ended up, he always would say, just stick with the process. You know, he'd be like, stick with the process. Stick with
the process.
Yeah. He did. That was in my head. And so that's why I was so determined. I was so relieved when it ended up working out. Justin, can you get to the latter part of your question? I'm sorry. I wanted to make sure I got that out.
Yeah. Before we do that, one of my favorite questions to ask is, based on your security days, is there anything that you use from those days when you weren't doing what you wanted to do? Like I used to be a server, and I took some of what I learned there about how things work and operate there with me. Is there anything that you learned from your time as a security still employ today?
Yeah. You handle people, you handle individuals differently. I remember when I could tell this story now. There was this, what was his name? This kid's name was, I want to say it was Hux. This kid's name is Hux. So he's a grown man. Now he got to be. So that was 2010. So what's that, 15 years ago? So if he's 18, he's probably like 33 now, something like that. Yeah. So his name was Hux. But he was known for ditching class all the time. Like ditching class all the time. And they would say he's not a problem, but you got to find them. You got to find them. Find them and bring them to detention. You got to find them. So we had a lot of kids like that's just ditching class. You find them, it's no problem. But this Hux kid, you know, it's not funny. You know, so this area, so I'm in Portland, and Portland is the most diverse city in Oregon. Outside of that, it is, what's the best way can I explain it? You probably would think you in the rural South outside of Portland. That's the best way I can say it. So I'm in this city called Molalla, and you got off the, you know, y'all can look up Molalla and look up the population and who all lives there. And so I'm the only brother in this city, and Molalla has a small city, small rural city. So just basically just white people all over it that really probably never seen me too often aside from watching a Blazer game. And so Hux is a kid that I found him. I said, Hux, you got to go. I got to take it to detention, man. Come on. Like I found him like a little bit outside the school. So he runs. So he runs and runs to the school. And so he runs to school in his lunchtime. And he's in the lunch and he's in the crowd. And I scope him out. I find him. I said, Hux. And I put my hand on his shoulder. I'm like, Hux, come on. We got to go. Then he's like, get the F off me, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, it's a scene. Like, it's a big old scene. And he's like, he's getting in my face at this point. And that's a little white dude. You know, he's like 17, but he's like 5'8", 5'7", maybe. You know, I'm 6'2". And so I'm like, Huck, get your hand on my face. Walk with me to detention. And then I turn away to walk because I'm assuming he's going to walk with me. And I see him like try to take off on me. And so I got his arm in mid-flight on the way to my face, got his arm, slammed him, and I slammed him on the ground, and he's chest down on the ground. I'm just holding him. And he's just calling me the N-word. In this, get off me. And so at this point, I got my hand on his hand, like from the back. And I'm just thinking about, man, am I going to choke this kid? Like, it's everybody's in the lunch party. It's in the cafeteria in front of everybody. And it took everything in me as he's saying all this to, like, continue to do my job and proceed to escort him to detention. But I bring that up to say that I would have handled him differently because I've been taking kids, like finding them all around campus, in and out, and escorting them back to detention with no problem, you know what I mean? And expecting him to be the case. So my thing is, like, just like I'm covering the league, you got different personalities. You have people who have certain tempers. You have different, I got a Stephen Curry story. You know, we'll get into about that when I'm talking about, like, just how different people handle different situations. I would have handled that a little bit differently. That didn't give him a right to say what he said, and I definitely wasn't at fault. But you know, just knowing people and understanding them, you know, understanding what makes them tick. And that's what, you know, especially in the NBA, different people that handle different situations differently. And so you kind of knowing that, that definitely helped you in the long run.
That's a great answer.
All right. You had asked me what the other part of the question was. As far as like staying focused on where you were.
Staying focused. Okay.
Putting in the work where you were, even though you knew you wanted to get to a certain level and all of that, but knowing that you needed to focus on your relationships and building the path that you were on without, you know, derailing yourself.
Jay, thanks for bringing that back, because I'm 42 now, and so I forget things, Jay. So thank you, man. Thank you for bringing me back, bro.
Yeah, we're all up there. Yep.
No, like, but that's why I wanted to bring it back to you know, telling about the security guard job, because I was so focused and I wanted to get out of there, and you know, so that's why I was so relieved when I did end up getting the job as the Blazer beat writer. But from there, Jay, remember, I come from Fresno, California, bro. Like, the area I grew up in was the west side of Fresno, where it's primarily Blacks, Asians, and Hispanics, right? That was pretty much it. Yeah, Asians, Blacks, and Hispanics. And so all I knew was Fresno. I had friends. Majority of my friends were probably dead or in jail or just living a life that I didn't want to go down. And so when I got that Portland gig, to me, I made it. That's it. It's a wrap. I'm happy. Like, I'm on TV 3 times a week. That's the part I didn't mention as well, is that coming with this job, I'm a beat writer for a TV network. So now I'm on TV about three times a day. That was new. That was fun and exciting. So I'm like a little local celebrity in Portland, right? And then on top of that, you know, all the players mess with me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I got the contacts. I got all the relationships. And Damian Lillard comes in the town and everything. So I'm just happy. My ambition crept in is when I started noticing, like, the difference between national reporters and local beat writers. And this is the difference I noticed, right? The beat writers were not breaking the biggest news. it would come from national guys. It would come from national guys. Like at the time it was Woj, Mark Spears, Mark Stein. Those were pretty much the three big newsbreakers back then. I'm talking 2010 to still today. They're still doing that today. You know, aside, you know, Woj who retired late last year. But I would just notice, like, why, you know, the beat writers, they're with these teams every day, but they don't break. When it comes to the biggest stories that's broken, it's coming from a national person. And then I would see, like, when a national person would come into town, how the general manager and the team would just roll out the red carpet, like, just give them whatever they wanted, like, just give them the star player to talk to for 20 minutes. They would take them in the back to meet with the general manager. Like they, and I would notice, I'm like, dang, that's how they're getting all these big stories. Like, you know, stories are getting handed to them. They're getting all these access, you know, because they have a bigger platform. They have a bigger following. You know what I mean? It's a more prestigious outlet, I should say. And so that's when I was like, you know what, man? Because I'm a competitor. I want these stories. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, I was happy. Again, like, I was happy. My man, growing up, I've always felt this way. If I had a car, a 9-to-5, in an apartment, I'm cool. I made it in life. That was it. Like, so I have, you know, I wasn't asking for much. But then when I got this job and got in this career, man, things changed, man. So I was all set. So I saw that from a national perspective. So I'm like, all right, I'm in Portland. I'm breaking some news here. I'm gaining some headway, but I need to get bigger. So what do I need to do? What do I need to take that next? What role? What's my next step to become a national NBA reporter? And I felt like I had to get on a bigger beat, like covering the Lakers or something like that, right? So that was my next goal. And what happened? Like soon after I came up with that realization, LeBron James announced he was going back to Cleveland after his 4-year Miami stint. And then right after that, the Cleveland Plain Dealer newspaper, which is the main newspaper in Cleveland, laid off a bunch of their sports staff. And they were hiring. They were hiring for a Cavs beat writer. They were hiring for this new role as a strictly a LeBron reporter. This was 2014. And they had about 500-600 applicants. Long story short, I applied for that, got the job. And the reason why I wanted that job was it's a beat job, but this beat is like, you know, a Laker beat. There are certain beats that are bigger than just a local beat. You know, Lakers have a huge following. Kobe Bryant is massive. Like, so if you're covering Lakers and you're covering Kobe Bryant, like you're bigger than just a beat writer, you know what I mean? You're kind of a national, but you're just on a national beat. That's how I looked at it with LeBron James going back home for his reunion. So I did. So I felt my ultimate goal was to do 2 years in Cleveland and then get my national job. Like that was my goal. And it worked out. That's exactly what happened. The second year in Cleveland is when LeBron then won the title, came back 3-1 from a 3-1 deficit to beat the Warriors. From there, ESPN called me. They called me during the finals that year. Had meetings with them, and I signed with them. And so that's how my trajectory went. And so from there on out, I've been a national NBA guy since 2016.
You know, we talked about the writing part, but like you also mentioned the television part and being on camera. Where did that, like, how did you perfect in you know, work on your craft in becoming, I mean, because I'm sure before that, even that year job, that you may have done some writing, but wasn't a whole lot of video. I mean, few people did YouTube and stuff, but like, how did you go about like perfecting your craft of the on camera and getting those reps in to become like comfortable? Because a lot of people think it's easy, right? Like, it's easy to sit in a newspaper room or in a newsroom and write stories. But when that light comes on and you see that little, you know, red flash or dot, it gets a little real. So how was that for you?
D, I'm still perfecting that, man. I'm still perfecting that. Obviously, I'm more comfortable than I was when I first started. But again, like, not even just the video component. Y'all got to remember, I wasn't a writer. You know what I mean? I was still learning on the fly. And when I got that job covering the Blazers, they didn't have an editor for me. There was no editor. And in those times, you got to do it all.
But a long time though.
Yeah, and I guess it is. But it make me feel old in those times. But the comment section of our site, you know, when you write a story, then they leave comments. They were open back then. Like now, most of them shut them off, but they were open. So here I am, this guy with a little less than a year of writing under my belt. I'm writing these stories and under the comments, like I'm writing good stories. I got the great exclusives for Brandon Roy, LaMarcus Aldridge telling me like stuff they haven't told anybody else, breaking some news, right? And I go in the comments and they critiquing my writing. Who hired this guy? Who hired, you know what I mean? It's just all exposed. And I used to hate looking at the comments. I'm like, man, they going in on a boy. And so it was that. And then it was TV because I was never on screen before. I was never on screen. And so, you know, I had to, everything I've done, I had to learn on the fly. Everything. Learn on the fly in front of millions. Just like TNT sideline reporting, right? When I got that job to be a sideline reporter, sideline reporting is way different from being in studio or being on SportsCenter. Cause you know, like say we're having a conversation, D and J. Like when you normally have a conversation, it's normal to you may stutter, you may say, "Hey, you know when we came," you know what I mean? Like that's all of that is natural, right? You could do that on SportsCenter. You could do that on the debate shows when I've been on with Skip and Shannon on their show. You could do that in that concept, but when you're doing sideline reporting, you have about 30 to 40 seconds to make about 3 points and to get through it without a blemish. And at the same time, you're listening to somebody in your ear, give instructions. And then another thing, you may start off, you're a hit on the court. You got 20,000 fans, right? Screaming. And then you may start your hit off on the court where the first 7 seconds is you on camera. Right. So if you see, watch a game when it comes back from commercial, hey, this is Chris Haynes. I'm back, you know, back his third quarter, second quarter here, blah, 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 up, blah, blah. Now I spoke to, and then when I'm talking, the producer would tell me in my ear, all right, you're off camera now, keep going. And so what that means is keep talking, but the camera is off of you now and get off the court. So now I have to get off the court and I'm walking through wherever I'm at an arena, like I'm trying to walk to my seat. And so I'm walking to my seat, but I got to continue my report as if nothing else is happening around me. One of the most hardest things I had to do. And I got that role because they seen that, you know, the relationships that I had and the news that I broke, they was like, we want you to provide that in our sideline reporting because nobody does that. And so I found tremendous value in trying to do that. And I enjoyed doing that. But that was the hardest thing from a TV standpoint, for sure. I ended up loving the job, ended up loving that role. It was something else. It was another creative way of doing what I've already done, which is breaking news, but it was just breaking it during a live game broadcast and doing it on the sidelines. That was just cool. So, but not everything, even that. You best believe for a year or so, there were some rough patches. You know, there were some rough patches trying to get my reports out in a timely fashion and not trying to fumble over my words and trying to be, you know, just the whole, you're on camera for one moment and now you're off and you got to get off the floor and you got to keep your same train of thought going. You know, all of that. You know, I had to learn on the fly. I didn't have, usually they'll bring on somebody who's done sidelines for a team before, NBA team, college, and then they'll bring them to this role. I've never done it. So everything that I have accomplished in this career, I got the job having had no experience in it before. And so I'm blessed, and I definitely think that is God. I know that is God just putting me in certain situations, but I definitely had to work my butt off once I got there, and I had the ambition to keep going and keep striving. But yeah, it's always been tough, man, with the, you know, trying to learn on the fly, because most people don't do that. Most people don't get opportunities like that.
All right, I'm going to ask the tricky question, because you're the reporter. You're used to asking the hard, tough questions. We're in a time right now, and it goes to your point that you just made about getting a job that maybe you weren't as polished for at the beginning, and being able, having the ability to grow into something, right, to what you are today. With everything going on, it's Black History Month. It's, you know, we're moving in a new time with new administration and, you know, some easing and ridding of, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion. What are your thoughts on what that's going to do to in the media and sports media industry? Because some people feel like, oh, you know, like you said, in the comments, they may, who hired this guy? Like, why did I should have gotten that, because maybe I got 2 degrees and he has one. So what would be your honest thoughts on, like, where you see this going with the changing of everything?
I got some thoughts on that. Hold on real quick, D&J. Hey, you asking a good question. Nick, hey, you got to come here, babe. She go after, you got to let my wife weigh in on this too. This is something. Hold on, I gotta.
This is gonna be a first, Chris, because we're gonna have a guest of the guest. Come on,
that's a first. Gonna have a guest of the guest, babe.
I love it.
They put me on the spot on this one. So you hear me talking about career path and everything. All right, get in here. I'm about to address this question. I want you to weigh in. And hold on, let me try to see. I'm gonna take this out. Okay, y'all can still hear me good.
Yep.
Perfect. All right, D. So be ready for your answer, D. So set that question up again. She's in here listening now.
Okay, so I'll try to shorten it, but it'll still be the same. So with the changing of everything in the current climate that we are, not only in the media space but in this country, where do you see the shift happening for media as it relates to DEI and opportunity for people of color and women?
Okay. Because he was talking about, you know, there were people talking about, you know, how I got my job. Like, you know, I didn't have any experience when I first got in Portland. Yeah, could be considered DEI already.
I
would say this before I address that. I would say this. So when I did see those comments, people saying, "Man, I can write way better than him. I'm a better writer. How did he get this job? Or I'm better on TV than him. How did he get this job?" And my answer then, my answer today, still, I still would say I'm better than you. Because the reason why I said that is you can know how to write to a T. You can dot your I's, cross your T's in writing all you want. If nobody talks to you, if nobody gives you information, you can't write nothing. So you just got a bunch of good words put together saying absolutely nothing. And one thing I had then and one thing I have now is the ability to present news, is the ability to, if I have to contact LeBron, I can call him. If I got to contact KD, I can call him. If I got to contact Steph, I can call him. You know, so I got that based off of my relationships and my track record, right? And that was the case then. So I had great content. My first couple of years covering this league had great content. Now, was it the most well put together story then? No, it was not. But it was LaMarcus Aldridge, Brandon Roy, Damian Lillard, Greg Oden, whoever star was at that time. It was them telling me something exclusive, whatever, some news or whatever. And they trusted me to present this. And that's what you can't fine. So the writing, the technical stuff, that ended up coming, that came over time. But what you can't teach is how to establish a relationship, how to establish, you know, how to get access, how to, you know, a track record. And so that's what I would say to that, right? So would you rather have a great writer who can't write anything of substance, or would you rather have somebody who will give you all the substance in the world, all the content in the world, but they're a little rough around the edges? You know, I'd rather pick me any and every time, but that was that. Now, as far as the DEI, am I concerned about I don't think I was a DEI hire. I definitely think I was the best person for the job at the time. It was a great, you know, it was a situation where there were actually two people who turned down the job. I was actually the third option at the time, and I got it. So I think I was the best hire at the time, even with TNT. You know, they're not putting, this is national TV. You know, this is, you know, you're alongside Chuck and Ernie and Shaq and Kenny, and like TNT does NBA the best out of all the current broadcast partners. They do it the best. So they're not bringing a DEI hire to try to mess things up. They felt like I can enhance the program, the broadcast. And I definitely think I did that. You know, I gave them exclusives, sit downs with LeBron that they've never had before. And so there was a lot of things that I accomplished there. And but, you know, when it comes, listen, my thing is with the DEI, I think I think it gave a lot of people, you know, it's similar to the Rooney Rule, even though the Rooney Rule is abused in the NFL. Like, you know, you give people a seat and you give them a platform that you wouldn't ordinarily speak to or speak with or even meet with. And I think, you know, the DEI, for the most part, I think they're looking at a candidate of people who they wouldn't originally look into. Now, that doesn't mean that they're not qualified for the job. It's not saying hire unqualified minorities. It's saying get them in the room to meet them and, you know, check them out. And then I think 9 times out of 10, you're going to find out that there is a whole pool of minority candidates that you never even thought of before. You never even looked into if you didn't have this policy into place. Now, if you're an organization that has a track record of already doing this in the first place, I mean, I don't think you need that initiative. But there are a lot of companies out there that I do feel that DEI initiative is still very beneficial to them if they want to have a more well-rounded, diverse company. So I don't think I'm a DEI hire. I think, you know, I was definitely somebody who was raw, but I brought a lot to the table early on. And they knew that about me from that year working for free. They knew what I provided. Now, Bae, I'll let you come in, weigh in on the deal. No, this is you, because you've been on this about, come on, come jump in. No, this ain't live. They lie. This is Charlotte.
Hello.
This is Charlotte.
Hello.
Make sure,
how you doing?
You're speaking to the mic. You got to speak into the mic.
Check, check.
So ask her, D. Sum it up.
I heard his question. Based on DEI, I mean, I think for larger companies, there's definitely going to be, I think what people are going to find is that DEI actually benefited white women more than black people. I think people are focusing in on black people. We probably were the 7th beneficiary of DEI. You have white women, you have Asian people, LGBTQ, accessibility, people with accessibility issues, those are not issues, but, you know, accessibility needs. So if you're focusing in on how this will affect black people, I think black people are going to be fine because that's what black people do. We rise to the occasion. And as Chris, I feel like Chris is doing an awesome job right now with Hanes Briefs. He is the brand. Like I tell everyone, when you go into a company, you are a brand and an entity in and of yourself. And if you listen to Gary Vee, like you have a whole iPhone, what are we doing right now? Everybody's at home, right? So it's really going to be about how much you're willing to work for yourself. And then you go out and get those brand deals and you don't have a middleman. Like I'm all about ownership. And I think that DEI, like this whole little shakeup, is going to really have people just like COVID did. It forces you to be creative, resilient, and believe in yourself and in the things that really matter. So I don't see it affecting if you're talking about Black people, if you're talking about women and LGBTQ and all, you know, the different groups, then yeah, it probably is definitely going to be something where there's going to be uproar in those communities. But as far as Black people, I mean, do what you did in COVID and figure it out. Everybody figured it out during coronavirus. So yeah, that's my thoughts behind it.
We love it.
My wife,
we should have had her on the whole podcast.
She's an owner. She's 2 years into, she started her own beauty supply store, Charlene's Beauty Supply, here in the Sacramento area.
Awesome.
So yeah, so she's big on entrepreneurship, and I knew she had some strong feelings, so I wanted to bring her in on that. So I appreciate you guys.
That's love awesome. It. So you guys get lunch dates every single day, huh? Working from home?
Nah. Well, listen, she don't want me around the store. When I go to the store, she try to put me to work.
Yeah, so my wife's the same way.
Yeah, I'm like, I want to go in and just feel like an owner and walk around and say hi to people. And she makes me go up and put wigs up and I'll put hair up. And so I don't go to the store as much as I used to.
All right, couple more things and then we can wrap. So one, let's hop into Hanes Brief. Kind of tell us what they can expect as you launch Hanes Briefs.
Yeah, so this year I've started, you know, breaking news via Hanes Briefs short clips. And so basically what that is just, you know, this is my little studio set up here, and I'll give a minute breaking, you know, instead of breaking news just on Twitter with words, I'm breaking it in a video setting. And about 30 seconds to a minute of me breaking news, explaining what happened, why, what, when. And then it's Hanes Brief. So it's my last name, Hanes, H-A-Y-N-E-S. I feel like A-D. I don't know. Justin, you may know too. Y'all watch Coming to America? I feel like McDowell's, you know what I mean? Try to explain the difference between McDowell's and McDowell's.
Yeah.
So it's Hanes, my last name, and Briefs, you know, not the underwear, but I'm briefing you on NBA news. And then my videos are brief. They're about a minute long. And so Hanes Briefs. So I'm doing it that. But my hope, my YouTube show is going to be Hanes Briefs Extended. And so that's the extended version. So that's going to be launching soon. I'm still waiting to get the date finalized. And that's just me. That's going to be a show where I'm talking about news. I'm going to be answering or having topics outside of sports. You know, DEI is definitely something I'm going to tackle. So it's getting more, you know, I've never been a person I've never been a person that has ventured outside of the NBA. And this show, I'm going to do that. And you're going to see, thank you for letting the wife make an appearance, because she'll be making an appearance here and there on my my YouTube show, depending on if we had an argument or not that day. And so, you know, I'm looking forward to it. So that's what I want to start my own thing. I'm looking forward to the autonomy of it all and just having the power to do it my way. And so that's what that's about.
Love it. So we, on this podcast, we like to give back to the next generation and always offer advice, whether they're young men, young women. Like we said, it's Black History Month. So a lot of Black creatives who are looking to possibly, they're at that position where, you know, you were. What advice would you give to young aspiring reporters, creatives who are looking to not even just get to the NBA, because now they may think that they graduate college and they're automatically, you know, on TNT and all that. But what advice would you give them? You know, looking back on how David, Mark, and Stephen A. gave you advice, but not necessarily like writing out the plan for them.
This is what I would say. And this is to any profession, anything that you're trying to accomplish in life. Don't BS yourself. Go at it hard. There are people, like there are timeless, like countless times, and my wife could attest to this, they'll come to me with advice, whether send emails or DMs. And, you know, I can't get to everybody, but some people that I do get to, they talk about how they're trying. And I ask, like, what are you doing to really try? And they're telling me things. And, you know, I was turned down once for this. You know, they didn't let me go to this one thing. And then they stop. I'm like, that's trying to you? Like, that's trying? Like, I think some people don't really know what going all out means. Like, for me, I had a family already. So wife gave me a small window to try to see if I can do this. If not, I would have been a security guard for much longer until I found something else. You know what I mean? But I was so determined to get out. Like, some people just have it, period. Some people just have it. Like, even the news breaking game, like, you got to be on it constantly. Your phone has to constantly be connected to you. You got to constantly making calls. And, like, it's a grind. So if you want to be whatever it is, you got to go out and stop BSing yourself. Stop, you know, if you really, you got to really assess yourself. And like, am I really giving 100? Like, am I really doing this or am I wasting time? You know what I mean? So that's what I would say. Like, that's the advice I would get. I would say, talk to as many people as you can who are in the place that you want to be. Get their advice. And then once you have a pretty summed up plan ahead on how you're going to attack it, you have to attack it. You got to attack it. You can't BS yourself. You can't BS. And that's my thing. Like, you got to go all out. I knew I had a 2-year window and I tried to go at it and it ended up working out. So that's the only thing that I would say. Like, I don't have any advice to tell you to do this and do that. The only thing I'm going to say is, like, do your research, find out, talk to who you need to talk to and figure out your plan of attack. But the most important thing is attack. You got to really attack and go at it.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. Special thanks to APM for providing the music used in the podcast today. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're not a member and would like to join, go to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.